Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. My special guest is Rick Romanka, and Rick has a new album out, Trippin' Dinosaurs. We just heard the first cut from that, which is Conversation. Rick, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, John.
So how are you? How's things going?
Things are going great, very busy. I'm actually watching my one-year-old right now while my wife's in the shower, so you're going to hear a bunch of goo-goo gaga in the background.
Yeah, I've been there. My wife and I raised five kids, so it's just an awesome thing. There's nothing like it. Now we're watching the grandkids, Rick, so that's even better. But it's great. It's so good to have you on the show. We've had you on the show in the past, and I think, you know, I'm a big fan of your music, and I want to get into the album and the making of the album, but I want to talk a little bit about paying honor to Jack Bruce today. We lost one of the greats, And I just,
Oh, oh my God, I didn't even know about that.
yeah, it just came across the news just a little bit ago.
Oh my
He died.
God, yeah, that's horrible news. Wow.
Yeah. He just passed away, 71 years old. And being a bass player, it's like he was way out there, man. It was like he was a person that I always thought, how did he do that?
Yeah,
It was like.
me too, and I just saw that that Ginger Baker documentary too, and re sort of renewed my interest in Jack Bruce. You know, I've always liked Cream, and I've always liked what Jack Bruce has done, and yeah, I'm kind of shocked. All these rock stars are dying way too young. You
Yeah,
know, it's a shame. 71 is very young.
well, it's one of those things where, I look back. Did you ever have the pleasure of seeing Jack live?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I did once, and it was with Ringo Starr's All Star Band. And wait till you hear who was in the All Star Band, Rick. It was. Well, of course, Ringo. Simon Kirke was the other drummer. Todd Rundgren was playing the guitar. Jack Bruce was
Nice.
on. Yeah, Jack was on the bass and singing. Gary Brooker played the organ, and I think there was one other person. But I thought, wow, what a band! And
I think I did see Jack Bruce with Ringo Starr's All-Star Band back in the 90s. Peter Frampton, I think Gary was with him, and I think Jack Bruce was with him then too, because he's played
Oh yeah.
with Ringo Starr on and off, right?
Right, he did, and
Yeah.
Walsh, Joe Walsh was supposed to play, and he canceled out, and they got Todd Rundgren to play. So Todd played a whole set of his music, and then Jack Bruce played a whole set of his music, and then
That's
Gary Brooker
fantastic,
played a
huh?
whole set of his music. And I'm sitting there
Wow.
thinking, my goodness, this is. And then Ringo, of course, he came out and did all his stuff, and Simon Kirke did all the Bad Company stuff. And I think back at that. And I think, wow, now I really, really appreciate that because they did White Room and all that. It was just great. But I thought we
Yeah,
would
well,
just, I'm
I
sorry, go
always
ahead.
say see. No, I was just always going to say. I always say see all your favorite rock stars now because, you know, they're all getting older, and who knows? You know, I just saw Black Sabbath recently. I have tickets to see Fleetwood Mac, and you know, it's you know, you never know how long they're going to be around. I just saw McCartney, you know, and there's no guarantees in life, and it just seems like a lot of our heroes that are musicians don't, you know, some of them get lucky, but a lot of them don't live as long as we would like. And so, you know, see them now while you can.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that. I do the same thing. I love that, and it's like to me, there's nothing better than a live show. I just want to ask you, what did you think? You've probably seen McCartney in his past tours. What did you think of this one?
I thought this was the best one. This was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, he was amazing. He was absolutely, he played 3 hours at Dodger Stadium. Packed house, played Purple Haze and did a guitar solo,
Oh my God.
Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, I mean, he, you know, the guy never ceases to amaze me, what he can do and what he strives for. You know, he could be very, very easily just sort of rest on his laurels and just not even play, and you know, he's done enough. But the fact that he's out there doing it, and live, he's pushing the envelope, and he pushes his voice, and you know, his voice doesn't break after 3 hours. I mean, you know, it boggles my mind. It just makes me feel like, okay, what's my excuse? You know, if this guy has the energy to get out there for 3 hours, you know, there's no reason why, you know, we can't be doing it. So, you know, it's something to aspire to be in that kind of shape and that determined at that age. That's great.
It is great, and I want we can use that as a segue into your new solo album, and Trippin' Dinosaurs. Now you did this, and you played all the instruments on it. Is that correct, Rick? You did the
Yes.
drums and the guitar and everything. Now, when you look back, and I love to ask this question because to me, there's no album like it. When I listen to McCartney's first solo album, McCartney, I can't get enough of it. And it's almost like
Right.
Okay, it's been out a while, hasn't it? I mean, really,
Yeah.
it's been around a while, but there's something about it that I just can't get enough of. And I think it's because, for me, that was all him. He did things that were kind of lo-fi. He did things that weren't real fancy. He did like some of the instrumental stuff. And it was so honest and real, the music to me.
Yeah.
So did you, when you heard that, what was some of the things that you drew from that? Did you, like you talked about how, I mean, it is totally amazing how his energy levels are so high right now. Because I just l
Yeah.
listened to an interview of his the other day, and it was like he's right on top of it. He's like, he's answering quick. He's witty. He's funny. He's all this stuff.
Yeah.
What do you think that? And it's interesting because the McCartney solo album seems to me like a beginning to me, and it's. But it was at the end of the Beatles, which is like there was never and will never be a band like that. So he already
Right.
had that. Now he starts this whole thing out. What do you think was amazing about that? And what did you draw from that?
Well, I just think actually I just read a book called on McCartney that I think came out this year called Man on the Run by I think his name is Tom Doyle, and I believe he wrote for Mojo magazine. He was a writer. And basically chronicles the period between 1970 and 1980. So the book starts where McCartney is like just sleeping all day and super depressed because the Beatles are ready to break up. And it begins
Right.
with him picking up the pieces and actually starting work on that solo album. And that's where the book begins. And I was already into my album when I read the book, but yeah, that album's been an inspiration for years, as all the Beatles stuff has been. But the fact that I didn't set out to try to do another McCartney type of thing. It was just basically one of those situations where I had these songs. I thought it was going to be another Mick Mars album, and the guys in my band play in other bands as well, and everybody was really busy, and it was just hard to get guys together. And I just sort of got the idea where I was just like, okay, I've done how many Mabel Mars albums now? Why wait around for everybody to be available? Let's just make this a solo album, and I'll just do everything myself. And I sort of got it in my head. A friend of mine, Jim Mills, plays drums and has a band called Extra, and I've been going to see him play, and he sings and he plays the drums, and he has so much fun. And he has so much, he exudes so much joy when he's playing. I guess it kind of rubbed off on me. And I just sort of got the bug. I said, I want to play drums. I started on drums when I first started as a musician, but I never followed through and got a whole big kit, and I switched the guitar pretty quick. But it was just a little sort of exercise and one of those situations where I wanted to do something all on my own and just sort of do an experiment. And that's kind of where it led.
Now, when you play with Mabel Mars and when you play with other musicians, there's a certain level of expectation that you have. You expect your guys, this is, we're going to be together as a band. We want to talk about how it is different solo to a band, and there's pluses and minuses with both of those. But when you start doing it together with yourself, and like, okay, you've got these songs in your head, and you go to your bandmates and you say, okay, here's the drum track, here's what I need, the blah blah blah, and they all start putting that together. How is that different from now? It's Rick Ramotke. Now it's you. You've got to put the drum track together. You got to lay the bass tracks down. Are you critical with yourself as you would be with other people?
Probably more so, definitely more so, because I know people are going to be scrutinizing it, and yeah, way more so, because you can only be so much of a dictator in a band. If you're the band leader and you're writing the tunes, unless you're paying these guys, which I'm not, we all have our other lives, and so we all get together for the love of the music. And when you're doing that, you have it's a compromise. It's a marriage, basically. You have to be happy with the player that you have in your band, but you also have to trust that player to bring the goods in his own way. And so, no, I don't scrutinize as much because, that would be a dictatorship. And I sort of give them the script and then let them act the part out as they will. And And that's I think what it's about, what being in a band is all about. It's about, you know, the all the ideas coming together to form one solid idea and one solid sound, and you know, everybody bringing something to the table to make it what it is, and having the sum be more than its parts.
Yeah, I always like that part of it too. I always like the part where you're kind of in, you know, drawing all of each other's talents. And, you
right.
know, you can go so far, and then they can, like, pick it up and take it places you would never go. Now, when you started getting the concept of the album, and it started working in your head, how did you get that all together? Because I'd like for the audience to know that, because that's got to be quite a bit of work. And I know you have other things going on. How do you get – is it like a project where you have – how do you organize that, Rick, and get that to all these thoughts? Okay, I want to do a solo album. I want to do these songs. How does that whole process come together? How do you organize that?
So basically what I do is I have my iPhone. And if I, you know, it's like, okay, I'm getting these ideas. I think I have an album, you know, wanting to come out. So basically I just start picking up the guitar or the piano, whichever, and you know, I always have my iPhone with me so I can record ideas, and that's basically what I do. I just start putting, you know, laying down some sketches, and I start working those songs. And when I feel like I actually have a tune, a lot of times the lyrics come later, but sometimes I get some ideas for lyrics as well. And basically, that's how it begins. You just start laying down some ideas, and then when I started thinking of rhythms and beats, and that's when I would go into the studio. And actually, I went to a rehearsal studio out here where I live, and would just kind of think about rhythms and practice parts that I would want to lay down in the studio. And basically, when I felt I was ready, I would book studio time and just go in and record drums and just sort of play to a metronome. And you know, play the song in my head, basically. And, you know, because what I would do is I'd go in the rehearsal studio and have little sketches of these songs on my iPhone, and I'd play along to those sketches on the drums, you know, trying to come up with parts and stuff. And then you just sort of build it. It was like building a house from the ground up. It's, you know, you just start with the drums and the bass, and then you add your rhythm instruments. And I was writing lyrics as I went along. And you know, the fun part about it is it's all improvisation, because the song's never been played live. So, you know, you can change it all the way up till, I mean, even at mixing time, if you want, you can start cutting up the song if you wanted to. I mean, you're never done until you're done. So that's kind of the process. It's just basically like building a house. You're starting with the foundation and just building it from the ground up.
How did you come up with these 10 songs? I mean, there had to be, did you write, like, say, okay, these 10 are going to work, or were they written for this?
Well, I think it was written for this because I had the idea of doing, like, a psychedelic album, sort of a stoner record from my youth. And, I mean, that was a whole concept, and I had the title of the album, Tripping Dinosaurs. So basically, that was where I was starting, and I was like, okay. And then I just started, you know, probing the song gods at that point. You know, it's weird. Songwriting is a weird thing. I mean, Keith Richards, I think, said that, you know, the songs are just sort of floating out there in the universe, and you sort of reach up and grasp one every now and then. You know, that might be partially true because, you know, sometimes these tunes, you know, pop in your head, or you dream them. You know, that's happened to me. and you wake up with a melody, but other times it's like almost like being a, you know, a psychic or something. You know, these psychics or self-proclaimed psychics, I should say, because I don't know if I totally believe in that stuff. But you know, they start concentrating, and then they see a vision. It's the same thing. You know, you start probing, you pick up the guitar, and you actually want to write something. And sometimes something will actually pop out, you know. You just have to go there and try, as opposed to just waiting for the idea to pop in your head. I mean, that can happen too, but you have to sort of be in that zone where you're thinking about songs. You know, if you're thinking about work or you're thinking about, you know, your marriage or whatever, that can come into play too in your songwriting, obviously. But if your focus is not on being open or receptive to ideas, then the ideas aren't going to come. You have to sort of be in that mindset where you're writing. And so, as I said, once I got the concept together, I started thinking about songs. And once you open up to that, then the ideas start flowing.
Well, I read an interview, it's been a year or so ago, Rick, about, and they were asking Jeff Tweedy of Wilco that same question about songwriting. And
mm-hmm.
I think he had a really good answer. He said, well, the guy was saying, do you believe like the music comes through you and chooses you and all that? And he goes, well, I think you have to work at it. You have to have talent. You have to work at it. You have to know what you're doing. You have to
mm-hmm.
work hard, study, and practice, and you get all that in your subconscious. It's all
yep.
stored up. And then
mm-hmm.
it'll just pop up into your conscious. And I thought, man,
yep.
that makes sense, because that makes, you know, some people could hear a song and wouldn't know what to do with it because they wouldn't know how to. It's like, okay, here's a blueprint to build a house, and if you don't know how to build a house, it's just going to sit there. So I think
right.
that makes sense. Yeah, but I like that idea where, you know, you're talking about how that you had an idea of an album that you wanted to go to and something from your youth.
Right.
Was there any albums that stood out to you that you were, like, thinking about or inspired by?
Yeah. Before I go into that, let me just say what you're saying about Jeff Tweedy's comment, and I totally agree with that. What I was saying is what happens after you've done all that work. Once you've sort of put in the work and learned how to become a songwriter, that's when you can sort of use those tools and get your mind on the mindset. Yeah, obviously, if you've never picked up a guitar or you haven't practiced and you haven't written anything in the past, not to say you couldn't write a great song, but chances are the more you've written, the more better ones you'll write in the future. That is sort of the way it seems to work for me. And you also have to be a fan. Now, that leads to your next question, which is, yeah, there's sort of been a little bit of a psychedelic resurgence, I think, recently. And this one band kind of did influence me a bit, this band Tame Impala, this young guy out of Australia that was writing this psychedelic music. And I said, wait a second. This is the stuff that I grew up on. This is like my music.
Yep.
I mean, I grew up listening to Zeppelin and Floyd and King Crimson and all kinds of, you know, Cream and Hendrix. And, I mean, you know, I love pop music, and pop is sort of what I'm more known for. But a lot of the stoner music that I grew up with it has always been with me. And I've always sort of scratched the surface with Maple Mars. But, you know, there's, you know, a couple people have sort of kicked me in the butt a little bit and sort of made me think, oh, wow, I need to, like, sort of go back to the stuff that I really liked as a kid, you know, as a teenager. And so, yeah, there are bands like the Flaming Lips and Tame Impala and you know, I've just been checking out a lot of psychedelic stuff recently, a lot of resurgence, a lot of old 60s. Just going back and listening to a lot of those albums and just sort of rediscovering the joy of that music. And that was sort of the springboard for the whole thing. And then I just had this title that popped. That one just came out of nowhere, Tripping Dinosaurs. And, you know, at one point I envisioned what would it be like to see dinosaurs walking around on acid. And then secondly, I was thinking, okay, well, there's a double meaning here because, you know, the country's in a new, we're sort of, we've gone through a lot of changes in the past, you know, 10 years, let's say. You know, there is a sort of changing of the guard. And if you even look politically what's going on, it is sort of like the dinosaurs are sort of, you know, being tripped up in a sense. And, you know, you can look at it a bunch of different ways, but the thing of it is to try to come up with something that was sort of cohesive and sort of fit in that genre of what I was trying to do stylistically. That was the whole point of it.
Well, I'll tell you, you did a great job, and I highly recommend the album. My guest is Rick Rumatka, and the album is Trippin' Dinosaurs. And MapleMars.com, is that the best website, Rick, for people to go to get the record?
Actually, no, they can get it. If you just Google the album, it'll pop up. I mean, CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon is probably the best place because you can actually get the CD, the hard CD or digital, whatever you want, whatever your preference is. There are some places that are carrying it as well. Cool Cat Music, that's all with K's. Cool Cat Music is this guy, Ray, who is Gianchetti, who has put out, I think he's released like two or three of the Maple Mars albums. And he's carrying it, as well as you can also get it from a place where we're selling tickets to some of our shows, Square Up, / Market, / Maple Mars. But the easiest way is to just Google it. There's a bunch of sites where you can buy it online.
Now, I will have to say, when you were talking about a resurgence of psychedelic music, and I grew up in that time period, and I remember when it was new and it was fresh, and it was just, it was freaky. It really was. And, you know, I grew up in that time, and I couldn't remember, you know, like the stigma of the hippies and the whole thing, and how people would look at that, and how kind of that, it was a complete change in the way people were thinking about things. And I think that's real important when you look at that music. It wasn't just the music, but it was how people had a different way of looking at life and just a different perspective. And I don't know if you've heard, have you heard the band Temples?
Yes, I just went and saw them.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
Well, I gotta say, I like their album a lot more than I like them live. Live, they're a little, you know, I feel like they're just a little green in sense that where the, I mean, it's the English way. Sometimes I think they didn't put on much of a show, in my opinion. They sounded fine, and I like the album a lot. I think they're pretty young guys. They have a lot of room to get better, but this album is really good. And I like the band. I think they're really good.
You know, the only reason I asked that is because I interviewed James Bagshaw, who's the lead guitar player and a guy that. I think he wrote most of the songs, and he was in the Moons when I interviewed him, and that was a pretty progressive band too. And I was kind of wondering how they were going to do that, because they put the album out and then they immediately put them out on the road, and I thought, how, you know, that's got to be hard, you know, because you start touring and you got to, like you said, you got to have that old deal. It's just not standing there, what they call the shoegazer bands, you know, that just play.
Right.
Yeah. But
I mean, they were fine. They were fine. It's just, you know, compared to like a show like the Flaming Lips, for example. I mean, that's a bad, actually, that's a very bad comparison because that's a circus. But like, for example, Tame Impala, a band that's very much like the Temples, actually. It's like a distant cousin. I just found their show a lot more entertaining, and I don't know what it was. Maybe because they have a bigger production, more production value with their stage show. That could be it. But at the end of the day, it really does come down to the songs and entertaining is one thing, but you need the material. And they definitely have, the guy writes some great songs, so, you know, I really look forward to hearing more from him in the future.
Do you think it means something to Rick? And I mean, when you're playing in different venues, because was this like a smaller venue or a larger venue? Because I think it can be, I've heard bands in large venues that just didn't work at all, but they sounded good at smaller venues.
Yeah, this was a smaller venue. It was it's the Henry Fonda Theater, and to be fair, the sound in there really sucked anyway. So one of those places where the vibe is nice. It's just I don't really like the sound. It's just one of those places it was a theater, I think, years ago, and it just sort of sounds like it was never properly tuned to be a live music hall. It still sounds like a theater to me. That's just me, though. I mean, there are some people that agree with me on that. It's just not known as an acoustically great place. Like I said, bands evolve and they grow, and if they get more, if they're not showmen, then they when they get to a certain level, if they continue to be successful, they get a production together, whether it's their light show or their, there's something usually once they get to that level that makes them interesting on stage, to look at as well as to listen to. And
yeah,
that's
a point.
And I like the small venues. I like tiny venues. I like stripped down acoustic sets from artists as well. So, it just depends on the band. It really does.
Well, my guest is Rick Remodkin. His latest album is Trippin' Dinosaurs. We started off the show with conversation. I'd like to play It's All in Your Head. And would you like to talk about that, Rick, before we play it?
People aren't going to be actually hearing the song. It's actually just going to be all in their head.
You have to look inside your head.
There's a pause on the other line. You're like, what? What is he saying? he's really into the psychedelics. No, basically it was just about, it's reality TV. I don't know where I got the idea for this, but it was just seeing all this reality TV and these people that are living these double lives and believing, a lot of these shows are scripted but a lot of these people do have issues. And so they get to the point where they're really believing their hype, and the whole deal with the song is just all this fame and everything is really all in your head because you're really sort of a freak show. And that's why people are tuning in, And so don't believe the hype, is basically, the message, if there is a message there. And that's the best I can do on that one.
Well, it's all in your head. Rick Remodkin's new album is Trip Dinosaurs, and we'll be right back to continue our conversation with Rick after this.
At the Hollywood nightclub, with the electric cigarette, you were glowing in the spotlight. Now your panties on the internet, so you're playing down a Monaco. You fell into the hijinks, you come to the meltdown. It's featured on your dick show.
Once in a
To welcome everyone back on Talk Radio. My special guest is Rick Romatka. Latest album, and you can pick it up on iTunes and Amazon.com and all the cool places, and CD Baby and every place like that, and I highly recommend it. It's a great album, Rick. I really, really enjoy it. I really like that song. It's got it sounds like it's a couple of different songs to it to me that came together, but I don't know if that makes any sense. But it's really I like it a lot, and I want to have you talk a little bit more about is there out of the songs, the 10 songs on here, which one do you like to listen to the most? Is there a song that you would like to just maybe have me play and talk about a little bit?
Well, you know, the one you just played, I really liked. I put a lot of work into that, and it sort of evolved. I mean, all these songs kind of evolved as I was working on them. You know, they started out with these little ideas and these little song sketches, and, you know, I wasn't fully some of them, the melodies didn't quite even come together totally until I had all the instruments laid down, you know, all the tracks cut. Some of them, the melody was there, but it wasn't quite, you know, fleshed out. And I don't know, I got a real buzz working on that one, just because I just saw it coming together, and I got, you know, that was exciting. It was an exciting song to work on. And then I played it for a really good friend of mine, a really early rough version of it. And he kind of made the suggestion where he said, yeah, at the end of the tune, you should just go crazy. You should just, you know, throw a bunch of voices in there and, you know, make it sound like she's real, this, you know, that this person's really freaking out. Like, you know, these voices are actually in her head. I was just like, hey, great idea. You know,
yeah.
It's just, you know, it was a suggestion of a good friend of mine, who has great music knowledge. And I was just like, yeah, great idea. But the other one, I'd say the one I really, really had the most fun doing was probably the last song on the album, the six-minute tune, Listen, I'm Waiting to Sleep, which is those were actually two songs that I kind of had left over from the last Maple Mars album that were not even close to being anywhere near done. They were just riffs that I had and little vocal melodies. And I just sort of got the idea I recorded them separately, but I had the intention of fusing them together to make one long tune. And that one was fun because I've always loved songs that sort of had these, you know, from Tommy to Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, Small Faces, and, you know, these sort of rock opera concept albums. And so just to do a song that sort of had some movements in it and some different sections that sounded like different, like completely different song, was exciting to at least attempt. And I just, that one I had a lot of fun doing too.
Well, let's play that. This is Listen, I'm Waiting to Sleep from Rick Ramatka. And Rick, I want to talk to you a little bit. You were talking about the rock opera thing. I want to talk about that when we get back. And we'll be right back after this, so stick around.
I'm waiting to sleep.
We're back with Rick Romatka, and that's from his latest release, Trippin' Dinosaurs, and that's Listen, I'm Waiting to Sleep. That's an awesome song, Rick. I wanted to ask you a question. You were talking about the rock opera, and there's an album I've been listening to in the last couple of weeks a lot, and that's SF Sorrow by The Pretty Things.
Great album.
What do you think of that? I mean, and I want to ask you about that album, what you think of that album, and also why do you think that they didn't translate or have any success in the U.S.? That just always kind of...
I think, number one, it's the album is great. There's no question about it. But I don't think it's as great as Ogden's Not Gone Flake, and I don't think it's as great as Tommy or the Who's Sellout. You know, there's some great, great songs on there. There's some pretty good songs. And I'm used to the album, so I'm a little biased. But when I try to look at it, sort of the big picture, I just felt like they didn't have the mega hits that some of those other albums, with the exception of Ogden's Not Gone Flake from the Small Faces. There were no real mega hits that came out of that. But, you know, songs like Afterglow and Son of a Baker, which actually Maple Mars is playing. We were actually playing that in our set. Those are amazing, amazing tunes. And not to say there's nothing amazing on Pretty Things, but that album was a bit of an inspiration for me. As a matter of fact, the song Truth was something that I was sort of channeling when I wrote Conversation. I mean, the song Truth. I was listening to that album a lot, and I love. That's my favorite song by far from The Pretty Things. And it's funny. A friend of mine, David Bash, who puts on a lot of these international, well, puts on all of these international pop overthrow festivals all over, you know, United States and Canada and England. He actually sent me a message couple of years ago saying, you know, Maple Mars needs to cover that song Truth, because for some reason reminded him of Maple Mars. And so you know, I was thinking about it, and I was listening to it one day, and I was like, well, what the hell, instead of covering the song, why don't I just write something that I feel is, you know, in the same realm as that song, but a different tune, you know, but that gets, you know, has the same excitement, I guess is the best way to describe it. Without ripping it off. And so, yeah, that song and that album in particular was something I was listening to a lot when I was first starting to write songs for this album.
Yeah, it just always kind of sometimes, like you were talking earlier in our conversation about, you know, listening to new psychedelic bands, and, you know, and but also going back and listening to some of the stuff from the 60s, and I go back and listen to things I haven't heard for a while, and it's just kind of like it's all new again sometimes to me, and I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, the thing about, well, especially like hardcore psychedelic stuff, like, you know, I'm trying to think of, you know, what is it? I'm thinking of this band. Now, this not Strawberry Alarm Clock, but another S band from the 60s. There's just some albums that are out there that are super psychedelic, but they're not all that interesting to me. They have the sound, but there still has to be a song in there, and it's. It's that fusion. From what's always got me really excited is the fusion of having the cool sounds. You know, Pink Floyd, you know, Uma Guma and some of their more experimental stuff, while I appreciate it, I like the songs. I like, you know, I love Syd Barrett's writing was just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that is, you know, that first album, Pipers at the Gates of Dawn, where you have this brilliant, brilliant songwriting and song structures wrapped in the psychedelic sound, that to me is so much more interesting than just having, you know, jams that just sort of go on and don't go anywhere, you know, or just having cool sounds without the foundation of a great song under it.
Yeah, I totally agree with
that. And I think that was partially maybe part of the Pretty Things thing is they were so they got out there, but I don't think there was enough foundation, even though they had the story. I also think that they came on the scene. I think that album was pretty early. I think it was what was it, 67? Or maybe it was 68, I'm not sure. But the whole rock opera concept thing wasn't quite there yet. I think the Small Faces did it first. I think then it was the Pretty Things, and then it was Tommy. I'm not sure. I don't know who did it first, but
yeah, they say they did, but you know, it's one of those things where I agree with you on the whole song structure thing, because I can hear music and I can think, okay, that's pretty interesting. It can be really intricate, hard to do, and I'm thinking, wow, that's you know, like the structure of the song is really good. But then also,
right.
I got to kind of go back to what you said. Yeah, it doesn't matter. To me, it could be anybody. And I hear the song, it's just amazing to me. And Rick, it's been great talking to you. I just want to be able to let you, one thing, is there any projects or anything that you're working on now that would you would like to talk about? We got about seven, 8 minutes left.
Yeah. Well, basically, I'm always doing music. I finish one. I like to do these projects, finish them, and move on to the next thing. And so right now I'm still promoting, obviously, Tripping Dinosaurs. But my next thing is probably going to be another Ruby Free album with my wife. That's a little side project that I did a couple years back. That's sort of a Paul and Linda McCartney thing, but we're going to get it even more countrified on this one, a little bit more of the country influence. Because my wife loves country. I personally don't really care for it. But I love the sort of old, you know, early 70s, you know, Flying Burrito Brothers, you know, Gram Parsons, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, anything from that early 70s era. I really like how they do the country rock thing. And so, and even some of McCartney's early stuff has that sort of hillbilly feel to it on some of his material. I mean, especially on Ram. And so that's something I'm going to explore a little more. It's not going to be a country album. It's going to be a pop album. But, you know, there'll be tinges of it here and there. And so I'm going to do that because it's readily available, meaning I can do it. I can start on it whenever I want. Maple Mars, like I said, the guys are busy. Steve Burns, the guitar player, is a producer. And he's working with a band called Calico that just released a really good album. Which is sort of a country album. Those guys are busy, but I want to start also working on a Maple Mars album, but that's going to be slow going. That'll, you know, who knows when that'll get finished, but I want to at least start the process of recording some new material because we are playing some great shows coming up, and we're talking about doing a short little tour of the East in the spring. So, you know, playing live and is one thing, but getting together with the band and recording new material would be really awesome, I think, and a lot of fun. And the last album we did, we had a real good time doing. And as I said, though, it's everybody getting together and making time to do it. That's the hard part.
Yeah, that is it. But I think that, you know, if you have that desire to get that done, it'll always happen. And I'm just a big fan of your music. I think it's great. Here's going to be my last question. If Rick Remaka could go back and pick any musicians from today to all the way back, anybody to pick three musicians to be in a band, who would they be?
Okay, so you're sort of cutting out, but I think what you said is if I can go back in time and pick any musician I want to be in my band, who would it be?
Right, yep.
Okay. I would have to have, let's see. I would probably have Jeff Beck on guitar.
Okay.
I would have John Lennon on rhythm guitar. So that would be my lead guitarist and my rhythm guitarist. So I would want Lennon's influence, obviously. On bass, I would have to have Paul McCartney because I'm such a Beatles.
You want to be in the Beatles, Rick?
Yeah, I want. Don't we all? I mean, every one of us wants to be. We all want to be a Beatle. You know, it's.
Yep.
It's like, you know, the thing of it is, it's such a hard question because I love so many musicians. On drums, I'd have to go. If I could control him, I would try out Keith Moon. If I couldn't control him, then I'd have to go to John Bonham.
There you go.
Because I just picture Keith Moon as just being this like a little hyperactive kid, you know, that you know, you have to babysit, and this kid's getting into everything, and you know, the parents come home and the house is in shambles because you've just been chasing this kid all over the place. That's what it kind of reminds me of. But then at any given moment, I might want to trade out Jeff Beck for Pete Townsend on a particular tune. That's a really, really hard question.
Yeah, but, I think of that, you know, what it would be like to play with those guys in their, you know, prime time. That would just be awesome. I think I threw Ginger Baker in there as a drummer. I think he was pretty amazing. He still is.
Oh, Ginger Baker is great. It's just crazy. You know, I mean, he's just a nutty. He's always been sort of, you know, just had this wild character about him. You know, just sort of this. He's very artistic. He's a great musician. There's no question about that. Kind of a bizarre lifestyle that he's had. He'd be another one to play with as well. I think that'd be an amazing thing. You know, Todd Rundgren's another one. I mean, I would love to be produced by Todd. I mean, you know, that was one of my inspirations for the record as well. Just, you know, reading all about Todd Rundgren. I've seen him live, and, you know, just being a fan of his production as well as his songwriting and his own music. You know, Skylarking is one of my all-time favorite albums from XTC, which, you know, he fought with Andy Partridge all the way through, you know, pretty much. But there's so many heroes that I have, and, you know, just to be able to make music and scratch the surface and just sort of, you know, sort of emulate some of my heroes and people that influenced me. It's a lot of fun. It really is. It's what keeps me going.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And we'll have to keep in touch. My guest for my get up his latest album, Trippin' Dinosaurs, on Amazon.com, iTunes, CD Baby, and I highly recommend it. Rick, thank you so much and have a great evening.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, John.
We'll talk to you later. And I thank everyone
right,
for
bye-bye.
Listening to John Talk Radio tonight. And we'll talk to everybody next week. Okay.